this guy makes me understand all this money stuff that I never understood before, mutual funds. And I said, Russ, you got to listen. I mean, I went to college and everything, but never learned the basic financial principles.
I'm in the tax business, and I have a lot of people come to me for financial information. And it's just my belief that Dave Ramsey has the best plan available in America today. And
I was really quite skeptical to really see how it worked, but and now it really is.
It's not a get-rich-quick scheme, and Dave will tell you that. It's not a get-rich-quick thing.
It sounds pretty cool being a millionaire, but, you know, when you're old man.
Through the years, I've seen airmen, if they get the bonus, they will apply it, they'll just go out and spend all of it and not even think about investing it or trying to pay off any debts or anything.
He made some good money, but when he retired, we just kept living like he was still making that money.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
We have got a very, very important session tonight. This could be one of the more important sessions to your financial peace. Because, see, when you get out of debt, when you get on a budget, when you get these things rolling, all of that, in my mind, is not just to be free, but it's to free up your income to enable you to build wealth. But when you start talking about investments, well, you're supposed to nod off immediately. I mean, how many of you have attended one of those really exciting 401k meetings at your company? There's not enough coffee on the earth, you know. I mean, whoa! But, and you know, the funny thing about investments and people that talk about investments are, and I grew up in a business sense in the financial world, so I can even be guilty of this, and I have to watch myself and my team. We have to watch ourselves to not fall prey to this. Sometimes when you're talking about investments, we fall off into financial speak. And we use our own gibberish language that means nothing to anyone except those of us in the business. It's kind of like lawyers do sometimes, or doctors do sometimes. I remember a few years ago, my wife Sharon, she had some headaches. And so it kind of scared us. And so we went down to the doctor, and the doctor sent us to the neurologist, and he sent us to have all these tests and all these things. You know, we had an MRI and a KGB, and we had a little bit of everything. And then you have to wait the mandatory 3 days. And they had whispered possible brain tumor. So old Dave couldn't breathe. You know, that was just killing me. And then you have to wait that 3 days. I think they do that to build the suspense up so you don't care when the bill comes. You know, I don't know why it takes 3 days. It shouldn't take 3 days. Nothing else takes 3 days in this culture except getting a driver's license. But other than that, I mean, it's just, you know, everything else is pretty fast, right? And so the truth is that we went in after the obligatory 3 days and we sat down, and the doctor came in his flowing white robes. And, you know, sometimes they sound just like investment people to me. He came in, he sounded just like Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah wah, wah wah, wah 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 wah, wah 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 wah. Wah 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 wah. I looked at Sharon, she looked at me, and we went, oh. And, you know, who knows? So I raised my hand. I said, excuse me, I've got a question. What did you say? Wah wah. And I said, I think you're confused. He said, I'm not confused. I've had 42 years of education. I couldn't possibly be confused. And I said, well, let me try to explain it to you. Me havey the checky bookie. You no getty paid till you speak it to English. You know, that guy grew a bedside manner right there in front of us and began to tell us that they had no idea what was wrong with my wife's head, and I could have told him that for a lot less than $8,000. Oh, the one Sharon joke. All the rest of them, we build Sharon up. We got to get her once. It's okay. Oh, my goodness. A lot less than $8,000. We could have done that. But if someone sits down at your kitchen table. You sit down in their office with your money. And they drop those glasses down on the end of their nose and they get this condescending air. Leave. Leave. Practice two words with me. You use them on financial and investment and insurance people that start that routine. Say, you're fired. You ready?
You're fired.
That's what you tell them. Fire their tails. Because their job is that of a teacher. And they get confused and think they're salespeople. You've got to find someone in the financial world with the heart of a teacher when you're going to buy products from them. Because so few people have that heart anymore. Most of them are highly trained marketing one-on-one machines. And they know something, a little bit in most cases, about what they're selling. So you really need to draw in and get close to someone who can help you with your investments. That's one of the things we specialize is putting the cookies on a shelf where I can reach them. So as we talk about investments, it's going to be my goal to not sound like Charlie Brown's teacher. I want to put this stuff to, because really what it is, it's a $3 concept with a $10 word. This is not rocket science. It's not that hard to do. It's not even that hard to understand if we just understand a little bit about the vernacular and how it works, the verbiage that we're going to use. The first thing I want you to understand about investments is that you want to use what is called the keep it simple, stupid rule. It does not mean you are stupid if you do simple investing. As a matter of fact, most millionaires have a very simple investment program. It's not some highly sophisticated computer model thingy. They just have something that they understand and that they do that works, and they do it over and over and over and over again. It's kind of boring. It's not very sophisticated. So what? They're millionaires. I think I could get over the board part, you know? I can work past that. We can work through that. So keep it simple. In other words, go back to or forward to the buyer beware lesson, where we tell you one of the goals is anytime you're going to buy something over $300, you never buy something over $300 that you don't understand. You have to understand it or you don't buy it. And that is true here. No matter what, never again do you do an investment without being able to tell someone else how it works. Preferably, I would like for you to be able to explain it to a seventh grader so they can get it. If you can't explain it on that level, that means you haven't internalized how it works well enough to do it. Well, Dave, I really think that's going to limit me to cookie jars. Well, that'll be better than putting money in stupid things that you lose. And that's what happens when you don't understand. You get scammed and schemed. And the thing is, you don't get scammed and schemed usually by someone who means to con you. What they usually are doing is they are enthusiastically ignorant. And you bought their goods. And it might have been your relative. It might have been someone at your church. It might have been your father-in-law, whoever it was that had this great investment scheme that you went along with because they seemed to know what they were doing. You will lose your money that way. Never put money in something you can't tell me how it works. And never, ever invest just because you get tax savings. Anytime you start chasing solely a tax shelter, and that is your only goal, you will always end up in a bad investment. Is anyone in here old enough to remember real estate syndication in the 80s? Can I hear a collective groan? You know, I mean, it's awful. I mean, there are tons of things where we have gone in the investment world and chased after solely the opportunity to shelter taxes, and we end up sticking money in a bad thing because it's got a tax covering over it, and that's a bad plan. Never do that. Never invest using borrowed money. That's pretty easy because we never borrow money in financial peace. So never, I'm going to borrow on my home to open a fried pickle stand. It's an investment, Dave. Well, there could be a reason that there are no other fried pickle stands. It could be because there's not a market for fried pickles. And you're about to lose your money. Think through these things. Think through these things. Never invest using borrowed money. Now let's talk about some of those $9 and $10 words and $3 concepts. The first one is diversification. Diversification means to spread around. Deep concept. Diversification means to spread around. And when you spread your money around, it lowers risk. Now let's kind of put it this way. If I take my $1,000 and I buy one stock with it, I buy, let's say I buy a good company, how about Walmart? I buy Walmart stock, right? I put my whole $1,000 in, you sit still. I put my whole $1,000 in Walmart. And so all of a sudden, since I have bet the farm, the whole thing is in one company. Now I'm really concerned about Walmart. Never before was I that concerned about Walmart. Now I shop there more just to single-handedly drive the stock price up. I go by and I check and make sure all my friends are going there. I go by and make sure everyone there is working hard because I want productivity so that we can have more profits so my stock price will go up. I'm awfully worried, awfully concerned about Walmart because it is my whole life at this point. Because I have bet the farm on one horse. If instead I were to spread my investments around, and I were to put a little bit maybe in a Walmart, maybe I were to put a little bit in a General Motors, maybe I were to put a little bit in Cracker Barrel, I like their biscuits. I'll put a little in Citibank, because some of you are gonna keep using those credit cards. And I'll put a little, I don't know, oh, maybe over here into another bank or two. But see, the point is now I have spread my money around. See, if you stand like this, you can lose your balance. If you stand with a wide stance, that's how any athlete starts any position, just about any sport, is from a low, wide stance. And the same thing is true in investing. Spread your stance out. Now if Walmart comes or goes, my world doesn't change much. I have all these other things to catch its slack. And if it's going up, maybe one of the others is going down. But by spreading my money around, I have lowered risk. Now let's practice. Diversification means to?
Spread around.
Good. So what we're saying is investments are a lot like manure. Left in one pile, it will begin to stink. Spread around, it will grow things. Now here's the drill, okay? You've got to keep in mind that you've got to spread. It's like having kids, okay? I've got three wonderful, beautiful children, but any of you have more than one kid, you know they are always different, aren't they? I mean, let's pretend for a second. Let's say that you guys, what's your all's first names? Mark and Paula were going to come out and sit on the patio of our home, and we're Southern people, so we would likely drink some sweetened iced tea out there. You know, we'd pull up a chair and have that. And if the four of us were sitting out there, Mark and Paula and Dave and Sharon on the patio, we probably would, well, our kids are real sure one of the reasons that we had them is to wait on us. And they're right. So if Mark and Paula and Dave and Sharon were sitting out there on the patio, we'd probably send a kid after some iced tea, wouldn't we? And you know, they'll go get it three different ways, won't they? Daniel, my youngest, my son, he's a great guy. He's got this big heart. He's a sensitive guy. He cares about people. He's going to be a wonderful pastor or a wonderful doctor or something like that. But I tell you what, he has absolutely no focus as a little kid. I mean, I sent him to the basement after a tape measure 3 weeks ago. He's still not back. If we send Daniel after the tea, he doesn't mean to be disobedient, but he'll just never come back. My middle child, Rachel, bless her heart, she has all the sins of her father. This kid is wide open. Everything is a hand motion. It's a drama. Life is, if you tied her hands together, she'd choke to death, you know? Every meal, the entire time Rachel was growing up, she spilled something because she was waving. She had to be a cheerleader. They had to let her be a cheerleader just to get rid of her because she was cheering all the time. You know, Rachel, everything's a drama. And Rachel's the age she grew up way back there, you know, when they had Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. And so with that kind of drama thing, what Rachel would do if we had sent her as a child after our tea, she would have set out the stereo speakers and plugged in the VCR because she can't just go get tea. No way. And she'd plug in Beauty and the Beast. And she'd come out going, be our guest, be our guest, be our, and serve the tea, right? Denise, her older sister, is a typical oldest child. Everything is in place. Every hair is in place. Always make good grades because that's what you're supposed to do. And she is, everything's exact. Her CD collection is alphabetized and in order, and all they're turned just right all the way through, right? There's two reasons they're that way. One is that's the way it should be. And two is, if Rachel were to move one, she couldn't put it back that way if she had to. It's a code. Denise, when she was about in her teens, she began to call the other two the children. And she can tell if the air in her room had been moved. Dad, the children have been in my room. The air was moved. Unbelievable. And so if Denise goes and gets our tea, she won't be able to stand it. There'll be 2.3 cubes precisely in each glass. It will be filled exactly the same all the way across because fairness matters a lot. The tea will be spaced evenly on each tray, all the way around the tray, just perfectly, and she will bring it with much focused stress and intensity. And so if we're smart at our house, because with all that stress, she's probably going to fall too, right? I mean, Rachel's for sure going to fall, but we'll be fun, right? If we want tea at our house with Mark and Paula and Dave and Sharon, we probably ought to send all three kids. Daniel may or may not come back. But as long as Rachel and Denise don't run into each other, we'll probably get some tea, right? You diversify your approach. You need a little bit of each of those in your game plan, and I'm going to show you what we're talking about. Give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. The Bible says to spread it out, to diversify, by the way. Risk-return ratio. With virtually all investments, as the risk goes up, so does the hopeful return. Now, what am I talking about? Well, if I take money, my $1,000, and I put it in a cookie jar, how much risk did I take? None, unless the kids find it. Right? But you usually don't lose money in the cookie jar. Zero risk, but how much interest does it pay? Okay, I could take a little more risk and open up one of those wonderful savings accounts, about 1.67% interest, yay? And you can get your money anytime you want out of the bank, right, as long as the teller's working and the anytime teller's working, neither of which are ever guaranteed. But you can get it out. It's fairly available and very little risk. It's guaranteed by the full backing of the federal government, which makes me comfortable. I could take a little more risk and I could maybe buy a mutual fund. I could take a little more risk maybe and buy a single stock. I could take a little more risk and go to Vegas. I could take a little more risk and be a day trader. I don't recommend Vegas day trading or cookie jars, but you do need to understand, when it comes to saving money, what I'm talking about is less than 5 years. When you are saving up for a couch, saving up for a car, saving up for Christmas, that's less than 5 years. When it's longer than 5 years, it's investing. Now, when you are investing longer than 5 years, there are two kinds of risk that you have to understand. Risk number one type is that you could lose the money. We all understand that one. Okay? You could put money in an investment that's bad and the money goes bye-bye. That's a kind of a risk. And you don't take much of that risk down here, but you also don't make much down here. The more you move along, you've got a chance to make more, but you are taking more risk, right? Now the problem is, when you're investing 5 years or longer, you have to make at least 6% on your money, or another kind of risk gets you. If you don't move along here far enough to get to 6%, another thing tackles you from behind called inflation. Inflation has averaged about 4.2% over the past 75 years, according to the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, the measure of inflation. Why 6%? Because if you make money, they charge us something out of Washington, D.C. called taxes. And if you pay taxes on 6%, you will net around 4.5%, somewhere in that range. So inflation and taxes will capture you and tackle you from behind if you don't move along here far enough to get at least 6% on a 5 year and longer investment. So you've got to take a little risk, or another kind of risk gets you. Well, Dave, I want a guarantee. That's why I have my 4.2% CD, my certificate of depression. See, 4.2% CD might be okay for 6 months or for 2 years. But if that's your long-term game plan, you are losing money. You got your guarantee. After inflation and taxes, your 4.2% leaves you a couple of points in the hole. So you've got to take a little bit of risk. I'm not a big risk taker. I've been broke. I don't like risk. But also don't want to tread water gradually sinking and not realize it by not making at least 6% on my money. The other thing you need to understand is a thing called liquidity. I have a very liquid portfolio. What are you buying? Water? Liquidity simply means availability. The more available the money is, the less return there is. Again, if I put it in the cookie jar, I can get it anytime I want it, correct? Correct?
Yes.
Good. But it pays zero interest. If I make it a little bit harder to get to, put it in the bank, they'll pay me 2%. If I make it a little bit harder to get to and I put it in a CD, if I take it out early, they charge me a
penalty,
right? Or I could put it into a mutual fund, or I could put it into a stock, or I could put it into something that a whole bunch of you own that is an excellent investment. But it's very hard to get money out of very, very quickly. If you need to get your money out of this real quick, it's very hard. It's not liquid. It's not available. What is that?
House.
Exactly. Real estate's a great investment, but there's a word for real estate that sells extremely fast. Cheap. Okay? You can't get your money out of it. You have to sacrifice the thing. You get in a desperation sale. And so what you've got to learn to do with investing, which is 5 years and longer, you have to take a little bit of risk and you have to tie it up a little while in order to get above 6% so that you start making real money above taxes and inflation. And you need to really get up there around 12 or 14% and hover there throughout your life. And I'll show you how to do that. Let's look at some types of investments that we do and things we do with money. The first one is a pretty typical. We talked about that. The certificate of deposit, the certificate of depreciation. Money market accounts, money market funds are a similar situation, and they're a great place to park something like your emergency fund or parking money through the year for taxes or something like that. They have a low rate of return and low risk, but you can write checks on them and you'll get about CD rates. A certificate of deposit, though, is kind of a funny thing. I hear people, they say, Dave, I have a CD program for my investments. I'm like, well, do you not understand what a CD is? A CD is not, it's a savings account and they gave you a certificate. I have a savings account. There's nothing sophisticated about this. That's all it is. It's a certificate that says you have a deposit. It is not a big hairy deal. It's a complicated, not even a really complicated savings account. Now, obviously, that's not a real one, but let me tell you, that's all it is. It's just a piece of paper. That's a real one. It says you have a savings account that if you take it out early, they're going to charge you a penalty. A certificate that says you have some money on deposit. So if someone acts like they're being sophisticated when they're doing a CD, giggle at them. Hey, my six-year-old, I mean, my kids when they're six and five can open a savings account. There's nothing sophisticated about this. It's a bank deal where you're loaning the bank your money and you're losing money. It's a lousy place to put money as a long-term five-year-plus investment. Don't do that. Let's look at some others. Single stocks. Mark Twain said it well. October, this is one of the peculiarly dangerous months to speculate in stocks. The others are July, January, September, April, November, May, March, June, December, August, and February. Most people that play single stocks are guys. Some ladies get into this, but there's a pride thing that goes with playing single stocks, and you will lose your tail. You're out there with your golfing buddies. You're going, what'd you invest in? Oh, I bought me a little of that restaurant. I like their biscuits, you know. I got me a little of that bank, and you swing right through, you know. And everybody's talking about their investment and what they do and what their broker says. And when we do the studies, which have been published, believe it or not, in things like the Wall Street Journal, we find that the average investor buying and selling single stocks on his own account has taken an unbelievable level of risk because he's not very spread out. And he only ends up making throughout his lifetime about a 7% rate of return when the stock market is averaged in excess of 12. Yeah, your broker's helping you. Get broker and broker and broker and broker. It's a high degree of risk on this kind of an investment, but we need to understand what stock is. Stock, when you're buying a stock, you are buying a percentage of ownership in the company. Since we're picking on Mark and Paula, let's pretend that Mark and Dave open up a print shop. Okay? Mark might be a professional master printer, and we decide to go in together and we pool our money and each of us put in $100 and we go buy us a little couple of $100 copier and we get started. I go out there, I'm a salesman, I go sell all the accounts, and Mark comes back, makes the copies, and we're really good at this, and we serve the customers and we give them a good value, and we've put $100 a piece in this. We've put $200 in it. You come back and visit us 5 years later, though, we've grown the business. Now we have printing presses running everywhere. We have a staff that is going out and marketing and handling all of these printing needs, doing all of these different things, and now the business has a lot of income, and it has a lot of people that owe us money called receivables, people that we have billed that haven't yet paid us, and we have $100,000 in receivables owed to us when you come to visit us. We own a couple of $100,000 worth of equipment. Well, when we started our little business, we incorporated it, and we issued stock. We issued him 50 shares and me 50 shares. Well, at the time, we had both put in $100. Our 50 shares were worth $100 apiece. Now this company, worth maybe $500,000, those same number of shares, those same little pieces of paper that represent our ownership, halvesies in this case, he owns half, I own half, but this little stock certificate says I own half of that company that's now worth $500,000. Now my certificate, my stock, is worth $250,000 because I own half of that company, right? That's how stock works. So if you hear of a stock going from $50 a share to $70 a share, that means the person that owned that share of stock is a little minute owner in that big old company. They own 1/1,000,000th of 1% of the company, okay? And since that company is now worth more, their little piece of the action is worth more. Okay, so when you buy stock in a company, you are buying ownership in that company. When stock price goes up, it's because someone somewhere thinks that company is worth more, so your little piece of the action, your little piece of ownership is worth more. Also, if our company were to make a profit, then we would take that home, wouldn't we? That would be the goal, right? We want to make a profit, Mark. We really do, okay? Now, if we made a profit, we'd split that profit up according to who owned the most shares, and we would take it home. So if you own shares in one of these big mammoth companies, Alcoa or General Electric, and that company makes a profit and they send it to the owner, the person that has that share, that profit distribution is called a dividend. It's called a dividend. So you make money on single stocks as the value of the company increases and as the company makes a profit and they distribute the profit. As the value of the company increases, the stock is worth more. As the profit happens, it comes to me called dividends. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Good. That's what a stock is. When someone says they buy stock in General Motors, that's what they did. They became a little bitty piece of an owner in General Motors because they think General Motors is going to make more later than it's making now, and their little piece of the action will then be worth more. Bonds. A bond is a debt instrument where the company owes you money. If you are the bond holder, that company owes you money. Now, let's pretend that Mark and Dave wanted to borrow some money. That probably wouldn't happen, right? But if we wanted to borrow some money, we could issue a bond. What's your name, sir?
Warner.
Warner is going to loan us some money. He gives us $10,000. We give him a piece of paper, an IOU that says, I owe you $10,000. It's called a $10,000 bond, okay? He holds that bond. Now, if he couldn't get his $10,000 from us right then because the bond didn't demand we pay it and he needed his money, he could take it over here and sell it to this gentleman, right? And that's why where you're buying and selling bonds. And this gentleman would give him his money. Now we would have to pay our payments to this guy, right? Because that's an IOU. That's what a bond is. It's where a company borrows money from someone. Now, your return on bonds comes as the interest rate fluctuates, and few individuals do well with single bond purchases. Might you guess why? If you buy one big bond versus having spread it around, you took more risk. Right. And so people buying and selling single bonds is about like buying and selling single stocks. They get caught up in the crossfire and their ego, and they don't usually end up making much money. Even if you bought them and held them, they don't pay much. Mutual funds are where investors pool their money to invest. Professional portfolio managers manage the pool or the fund, and your return comes as the value of that fund is increased. Now, let's try to put that into English. This is a mutual fund. I know it doesn't look like a mutual fund, but it is a mutual fund. Let me show you what I'm talking about. Could I have all of you in the first row here stand up? Just right along here. Stand up, everybody. Stand up, everybody. That's good. Right about there. That's perfect. Good. Okay, what's your first name, ma'am?
Karen.
Karen, put some money in this fund, okay? What's your first name, ma'am?
Carolyn,
put some money in this fund. Mark and this young lady, put some money in this fund. It's Errol puts some money in this fund.
Sean
puts some money in this fund.
Steve
puts some money in this fund. These folks right here have just mutually funded this. It's a
mutual fund.
This is hard, isn't it? Thanks, guys. Have a seat. That's all it is. It's the opportunity to put money in together to do something that individually they couldn't do. The average mutual fund is around $1 billion. That's the medium-sized ones, okay? $1 billion. So a whole bunch of people put money in here. Now, I'm going to be the fund manager since these are my visual aids, okay? And they have trusted me by putting their money in here. Now, what I take this money out and buy with it tells me what kind of mutual fund it is. If I were to buy bonds with it, this is a good, a bond mutual fund. Perfectly. They mutually funded it. We bought bonds. This is hard, isn't it? If I were to buy stock in companies that make things like Q-tips, close-up toothpaste, Vaseline, Kleenex, Whoppers, Sony camcorders, those are not American companies. Those are all foreign companies. Those are all products we as Americans consume, but if I were to buy stock in those companies, they're foreign companies, they're overseas companies, they're international companies, and we're buying stock, so let's try to figure out what this is. This is an international stock mutual fund. Good. Try it again. International stock mutual fund. Perfect. Okay? Now, if I were to buy stock in companies out of here that, oh, things like maybe Walmart, maybe AT&T, I don't know, maybe IBM, maybe Home Depot, maybe Kmart, maybe not. And I were to buy stock in 90 to 200 different companies, and these companies were known for the fact that they were young or medium-sized, medium-aged companies that were growing. We might call their stocks growth stocks. So this is a
growth stock mutual fund.
We're getting it. So they mutually funded it. We bought 90 to 200 of America's companies that are growing, and our return comes as this little pool of stocks becomes worth more. Their piece of the action is worth more. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so as the stock market goes, so goes a growth stock mutual fund. Well, Dave, can you lose money? Uh-huh. Because these things go up and down, because America's best and brightest companies as a group go up and down. Some years back in the 90s, we got spoiled rotten. They didn't go anything but up. Some of you are young and you were never around when the market went down. And the first time it went down, you freaked out. Oh, it went down. I didn't know what could do that. You know, well, it does go down. It goes up and it goes down. But the neat thing is, when you invest in a good growth stock mutual fund that represents a bunch of the major parts of our economy, you're pretty safe if you leave it alone. If you leave it alone. If you buy when everything's good and everyone else is doing it, and as soon as it drops, you freak out and sell, you buy high and sell low, you will lose money. Okay? But now understand this statistic. This is interesting. Ibbotson, who does studies of the stock market, much like a Dow Jones or a Standard & Poor's, one of the kind of the Bible of the deep, dark annals of research, they tell us that 97% of the five-year periods, rolling five-year periods, any possible five-year period you want to pick in the stock market's history, 97% of them have made money. 97% of the time you put money in a growth stock mutual fund that is a standard fund, leave it alone 5 years, you will make money. Leave it alone 10 years, 100% of the rolling 10-year periods in the stock market's history have made some money. Not always a bunch, sometimes a bunch, sometimes a really big bunch. But no matter what, 97% of the five-year periods have made money, 100% of the 10-year periods have made money. So if I'm 35 years old, and the stock market goes down, and the news anchor is going, oh, Chicken Little, the sky is falling, the market went down. Do you panic and bail? No, because you're thinking long term. This is a long term investment. You're 35 years old. You've got 20, 30, 40 years before you're going to touch that money. And every time, unless our entire economy as we know it crashes, in which case the FDIC is gone and your CD is not there. Think about it. If all 90 to 200 of America's best and brightest companies crash, you don't have any place to eat or buy groceries or gasoline. You can't go to the movies. You can't get any construction materials. The hardware stores, most of them are gone. Okay? Most of these are publicly traded companies or are owned by a publicly traded company, and they're going to go bye-bye. Half of what we know, three-quarters, 90% of what we know in our open market today would have disappeared economically if these companies all go broke and this becomes worth zero. Consequently, even through the Great Depression, we never had any mutual funds go broke, because you'd have things like Lowe's and General Electric and Alcoa and Amana and all these different, you know, FedEx, all these things would just be worth zero. I mean, can you imagine if all of those companies at the same time were worth zero? You better buy an Uzi and dig a cellar. It's getting bad, okay? So you're safe. Now think about this with me. So when the market dives a little bit, I kind of smile, because the way I see this is something I'm going to be buying because I'm going to keep it a while. So when it drops, I think it's on sale. Okay? I don't panic and get out. That's when I get in. Okay? I scratch together money that I wasn't planning on putting, and I dump it in when it drops, because I'm thinking 100% of the 10-year times from now, it'll be worth more. Eggs are on sale. That's when you buy eggs. Okay? So think about mutual funds in that way. I don't sell mutual funds. You can do whatever you would like to do. Now let's think about this for a second. How does a mutual fund really work? Well, there is a guy or a gal or a series of them. Actually, the best ones, there's a series of them, a team that are managing the stocks that are in here. We select with mega research. One of the funds I bought last year spent $50 million determining which stocks to buy and put in here. Now, who's going to pick a better stock? You and your stockbroker or $50 million worth of research? Think about this for a nanosecond. It will come to you. Okay? Now, the other thing that happens is this. We hire people to work for us at this mutual fund company that help us select these stocks. These people are nerds. They are stock analysts. If you're a stock analyst, I'm sorry, but I've never met a good one that wasn't a serious nerd. They're expensive nerds. They come to work in a car longer than your house. Okay? They make $300,000 to $400,000 a year, and they are specialized nerds. For instance, if I were owning and operating a mutual fund, a growth stock mutual fund, I would probably have over here a restaurant nerd. Now, the restaurant nerd's job is to know everything about restaurants and what's going on. If you go into his office, it's got a plaque on the wall, Restaurant Nerd University. He takes Restaurant Nerd Quarterly, the magazine. He probably came out of the restaurant business and might have even been a CFO, a chief financial officer for one of the larger chains. He goes to the conventions where they sell restaurant equipment because he wants to see if the restaurant's expenses are going up, thereby their profits going down and their stock price would go down. So he wants to be on top of that. He studies consumer trends, whether you are impulsing, whether you want drive-through, drive-at, stop-and-eat with peanuts on the floor. What is it you want to do? Okay? And he knows everything about the direction the restaurants are going and the consumer is going. He eats, lives, and breathes restaurants all day long. Well, me and the team that manage this fund are sitting up here, and we get a call on the bat phone, and we pick up the bat phone and we say yes, and it's the restaurant nerd. And he says, that little restaurant chain down there in Tennessee, Cracker Barrel, that you like so much, Dave, has got a problem with their biscuits. Sell. I reach up on the computer, I hit F2, and we sell 6 million shares, just like that. 4 days later, you get an inkling something might be wrong because there's an article in USA Today, money section, about this tall down in the corner. Now, there's nothing wrong with Cracker Barrel's biscuits, by the way. They're just fine, okay? This is an example, all right? Now, now, the deal is this. Me and my team of nerds, because see, I don't just have a restaurant nerd. I've got a nerd that looks over retail. I've got one that does nothing but follow Bill Gates around. We've got one looking at the automotive industry. We've got one looking at the clothing industry. We've got one doing just about everything. As a matter of fact, we have a whole herd of nerds. that are there to help us decide which of these to go in here. And they're all expensive experts in their field. And they tell us what to put in here. And guess what? If this thing keeps going down while all the others just like it are going up, you know what these wise people will do? They'll take their money out of here and put it in the one that's going up and take it out of the one that's going down. So if I'm managing this thing and I want to keep my job, I buy the ones that are going up. I have to buy more winners and sell the losers in order to win this game, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you've got professional management here with mega research, and if I put $1,000 cash in one company, I've taken a whole lot more risk than I have if I take $1,000 and I put it in a mutual fund, and thereby it's spread across 90 to 200 companies with good management. And here I've got a thing called diversification. And diversification means to
spread
around. Good. All right. Now, let's look at another one. Oh, no, let's finish with this one. I'm sorry. Now, long-term investments is what you want to use mutual funds for. They are lousy short-term investments. Some of you back in the 90s got spoiled and you thought you could jump into any old mutual fund and you would always make money on the short term. If you're not going to leave it alone at least 5 years, do not buy a mutual fund, okay? Don't do that. And I recommend never buying a mutual fund that doesn't have at least a 5-year track record. I want to see that they've gone from here to here over 5 years. I don't care what they did in 1 year. Anybody can get lucky. I don't even care what they did for 3 years. If the mutual fund is not old enough to be potty trained, do not buy it. Okay? And there's 7, 8, 10,000 of these things to pick from, so there's no need for you to pick one that's half baked. I personally prefer them to be worth to be 10 years old or even 20 years old. And man, I really love the old ancient ones that started back in the 50s and the 70s and the 60s because they've survived some roller coaster rides that we've not seen since then. Okay? Let me give you an example. In 1974, a couple of events were going on. We had a little resignation of a president, and the stock market tanked. In the midst of that, we had an energy crisis, and the stock market tanked. As a matter of fact, the stock market lost almost as much value, within 1%, as it did in the great crash of the late 20s that caused the Great Depression. 1974, we had as much value lost, percentage-wise, as they did there. We just had a better economic structure, so we survived. But the market tanked. It went down 42%, almost in half. It took it 5 years and 2 months to come back, 62 months to come back. Now, if I can buy a mutual fund that has a great average annual rate of return since before 1974, and including all that mess, these boys know how to handle a down market as well as an up market, don't they? And I don't have to get some hotshot who's never faced the real world yet that's only been doing this 4 or 5 years. You see, I'm getting old. And I like to invest with people who have no hair and gray hair. They seem to have a little more life under their belt and a little wisdom that goes with that. So I recommend 5 years at least, but I personally try to buy mutual funds that are 10 years old or older. Now, when you're doing that, you spread it across 4 types of funds. The 4 types of funds, and put about a fourth in each, are growth and income. Now, growth and income is a really calm, easygoing fund, okay? This is the conservative one. This is the Denise fund, right? Everything is exact and precise. And when the stock market went down in the early millennium, went down 8%, I had a growth in income that went up 4% that year. Now, 4% is not a great rate of return, but it's really great considering everyone else lost 8%. Okay? So that's a pretty nice job. This is the calm, stable one that you can count on. Sometimes the growth in income is called a large cap fund. Now, the reason you might hear it called that is because cap means capitalization. Capitalization means money. Big money company. Big old dinosaur company is a large cap fund. And these big old dinosaur companies don't move around as much. They're not as volatile. They're not as exciting on the upside, but they're not as exciting on the downside. So it's good to have some in there. I own a growth and income fund that has been open over 70 years. Over 70 years, this particular fund has averaged over 13.56% interest. Whoa! Not interest, but growth. Okay, that's a pretty strong average over 70 years. It's so conservative, it's never had a down year in 27 years. That fund is safer than your house. I don't want to take the risk of a stock market. Well, you bought a house. You didn't get a guarantee with that house, did you? All you knew was that generally if you hold on to a house 5 or 6 years, it's going to go up in value in most areas of the country. And so that's what you were betting on, was the track record. And that's what you buy a mutual fund based on. Then you need to put a fourth in growth. Growth is kind of medium. Growth might be called a mid-cap fund. Mid-cap meaning middle capitalization, medium-sized companies. Also, you could hear this called an equity fund sometimes. A growth fund's kind of right there in the middle. You need to put 25% overseas, foreign, international. Think about it now. Remember, the name of the fund kind of tells you where those companies are. So if I had a Europe or a Eurasia fund, it might be companies that are in Europe and Asia, right? Okay, this isn't hard. Now, if I put 25% overseas, well, Dave, you're not very patriotic. Honey, you're already using all these products. You're the one creating this, okay? And on top of that, sometimes you want to participate in some quality companies like a BMW, okay? And you want to get in on some of those profits, and so you want a fourth in something like an international. You want another fourth in something like an aggressive growth. Now, this is a wild animal. This is the one with the tech stocks and the web stocks and the healthcare stuff and the biotech and all the new startup companies. It's, woo, it's fun because it's always going up or it's going down. This is the Rachel Fund. It's wild. It's fun. You're always going to be awake, but you're not sure what the game is, you know? If you put all your money in aggressive growth, and sometimes I meet people say, well, Dave, I'm under 30, so I'm going to put it all in aggressive growth. That's really stupid. That's like eating pizza and riding a roller coaster. You will have fun, but you will also get sick. Don't do this, okay? Because these things don't always just go up. And that aggressive growth, it's going to do something dramatic all the time, up or down. You want to participate in the fun, but you don't always want to participate in the fun, right? Okay, so keep that in mind as you're doing this. Now, the aggressive growth is sometimes called an emerging market fund or an emerging growth fund because these are companies and industries that are emerging. Sometimes the aggressive growth is called a small cap fund. So what kind of companies are these?
Small.
Small. Yeah, we're catching on, aren't we? So if you hear a small cap fund in a few minutes, be listening, it's coming, then you would know that that is an aggressive growth fund and you want to put about a fourth in each of these to be able to win. Other investments that you could do would include rental real estate. I personally love real estate. I'm an old real estate guy, but I don't borrow money, so that means I buy real estate slowly because I have to save up and pay for it. And that's a big, hairy purchase, isn't it? So I can't use a $1,000 example on that one, can I? And if you want to do some nothing down stuff, that's great. That's a direct backdoor way into bankruptcy court, okay? Please don't play with rental real estate when you're broke. You will be broker and broker. There is no way around it. It's going to get bad quickly. And if anyone wants to play get-rich-quick real estate, all you're doing is making some tape tycoon money. All right, in the real world out here, and I've owned over 1,000 pieces of real estate in my life, I know a little bit about this. The way people make money in the real estate business is just like they do in the stock market. They pay cash for it, and they hold it a long time, and they get a really great buy when they're buying it. As a rental real estate purchaser, never pay retail. Never, ever. As an investor in real estate, I never bought a house or a piece of property, an apartment complex, over 70% of appraised value at that time. You have to steal it if you're going to be an investor. That's where the money is made in real estate, is at the buy. As an investment, this is probably later in your wealth building. I want you to have serious mutual funds. I want you to be out of debt and have some extra cash rolling around, and you always wanted to be a landlord. Now it's time. This using real estate to build wealth with from nothing is a, well, it's a shortcut to bankruptcy court. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt. You need a lot of cash to play in the real estate world and win, because you've got to have a thing called staying power, because you will end up buying and you will end up selling in desperation if you don't. Other kinds of investments are a thing called annuities. Annuities are a savings account with an insurance company. With an insurance company. There are basically two kinds of annuities. There are fixed annuities and there are variable annuities. Now, here's the drill. All an annuity is, technically speaking, is a coat. It's a coat to keep your money warm, okay? Now, if we're going to put our money in the cookie jar and we're going to just have a simple savings account at 5%, over, say 5% at the insurance company over there, we're going to do 5%. That's called a fixed annuity, and we put a coat over it, and it keeps it warm from taxes. Annuities grow without paying any taxes until you pull them out. Okay? Now, when you're doing annuities, you pay a fee on the investment and you pay a fee for the coat. Okay? The variable annuity is simply a mutual fund. Well, I guess we better get the mutual fund, right? It's a mutual fund inside of the coat. The coat is there to keep it warm and let it grow without taxes until you pull it out. Now, you pay the mutual fund fees and all that stuff, and you pay another little fee to the annuity company that drapes their coat around it, and it grows tax deferred, meaning you don't pay taxes on it until you pull it out. So if you've maxed out all your retirement accounts and done everything else you can do, all your 401ks and 403bs and Roth IRAs and all the stuff we're going to talk about in retirement and college planning, and you want to do some other investing that you're going to leave alone, this is a way to let your mutual funds grow without taxes. Problem is, insurance people sell these and they end up selling them out of desperation, I think, at the wrong times. For instance, a 403b at teachers and hospitals grows without taxes until you pull it out, doesn't it? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay, now, if I had a mutual fund inside that 403b, it's already growing tax deferred and I'm paying the mutual fund fee, right? But I get the tax deferred growth for free because it's in that 403b plan or 401k type plan, okay? Along comes the insurance business, and they let you buy a variable annuity inside the 403B. Now I'm paying for a coat, but I wasn't cold. It's redundant, okay? You're paying this fee to get the mutual fund to grow without taxes, and it was already growing without taxes. So you teachers and nurses and those kinds of things, watch carefully in your 403Bs and buy mutual funds only. Don't buy variable annuities. You don't need the coat. It's not cold. Okay? And you don't need to pay that extra fee. So these things have a place, but the place is not inside of a retirement account. Other things that we can put money in, but better not, are things like commodities and futures. Any of you see Trading Places with Eddie Murphy? That was the commodities market, the pork bellies, right? I paid some stupid tax one time in the commodities market. I found a guy that a friend of mine was playing golf with. I was 26 years old. I was making tons of money, too much money, more money than I had since, okay? And this buddy that was playing golf with a buddy of mine, because I don't play golf, was, he had found a guy that was doing gold futures, which is where you buy a position of what gold is going to be worth out there many days out, and if it's worth that or more, you make a bunch more money. If it's worth that or less, then you lose all your money. It's an all or nothing deal, and it's big bucks, okay? So it was a tenfold deal, so if we put in $5,000 each, our $5,000 would be $50,000 if gold hit that mark 92 days out. So we bought this contract through this guy who had hit the last 11 out of 11 times. We figured he had a dozen in him. 11 for 11 he had hit. And we were going to turn $5,000 into $50,000 each. That's a pretty sweet deal, isn't it? I have never looked at gold in my life. I watched gold every day for 92 days. I became a gold expert during that 92 days. And what I found was I didn't want any more gold because my $5,000 was gone at the end of 92 days. It's gone. Totally lost the whole thing. I paid stupid tax. Do not play with get rich quick. If something sounds too good to be true, honey, it is. Okay? And when you start buying futures in pork bellies or futures in wheat or futures, you're betting against God here. Okay? Because you're betting against a crop coming in or a crop not coming in, and you're going to predict the weather now. Give me a break. Even the weather forecasters can't predict the weather, and they get paid for it. Okay? Don't get into this thing. You're going to lose money. So with commodities and futures, this is a very, very high degree of risk, and you actually statistically have a better chance at Las Vegas. Okay? Now, there's a couple of other things running around I want to address as good ways to lose money, and then we'll wrap this up. Number one is a recent study published in USA Today, done by the Securities and Exchange Commission, tells us that 70 to 90% of day traders are losing money. A day trader is a person buying and selling stocks given in a one-day period of time, jumping in and out of the stock market. If you're playing stocks as a day trader, you are losing your tail. Wake up. You're a gambling addict, okay? You are losing money, guys. Get out of there. I had a lady call me a few weeks ago on the radio. Her husband had lost in the last 9 months $650,000 day trading. The last $125,000 of that he lost, he had put on credit cards. The guy running the engineering in my radio booth in there cues in on the intercom and says, "At what point during this process does he realize this isn't working?" You know? Whoa! $650,000 before he woke up and his wife's leaving him. She's gone. She bailed, is what she told us that day on the air. Okay? Don't get caught up in that stuff. You're going to lose your tail end. There's another really good way to lose some money, and it's a thing called viaticals. Stay away from viaticals. Viaticals are where you buy a position, the beneficiary's position, where you would receive the money from a life insurance policy on someone who is terminally ill. Take someone who has cancer or AIDS and has a life insurance policy. They want some of their money while they're alive. They will sell a $100,000 beneficiary position for maybe $60,000 to a company. That company would sell it to you for maybe $65,000. When that person dies, you're supposed to get $100,000. Problem with this is the securities commissioner says that there are 38 states where the attorneys general are investigating scams now in this. And these things are awfully hard to predict. It's hard to tell when somebody's going to die, okay? Not only is this a little morbid, it's really stupid. Stay away from viaticals. Stay away from day trading. Stay away from commodities. I use mutual funds and paid for real estate to do all of my long-term investing. Now, as we are putting together financial peace here step by step, as we're doing budgeting, as we're putting together a game plan to get out of debt, as we're learning how to buy things at a bargain, as we're holding each other accountable and encouraging each other, I want you to understand this is not just a class. This is a permanent change in a way of life. And I want you to understand this with an old story that I really love. There once was an old man up on the side of the hill. This old man was known far and wide as being able to answer any riddle. There were two young smart alecks down in the valley, and these two guys decided they were going to get the old man. Their game plan was to capture a small bird. And they would go to the old man's house and ask him, "Is the bird alive or is the bird dead?" And if the old man said the bird was alive, they would crush it and kill it. Yuck. And if the old man said the bird was dead, they'd let it go. And either way, they had him. So right with their plan, they get up early one morning and they capture a small bird. We see the mist rising off the mountain trail as they walk up the mountain trail to the old man's house, and they knocked on his door. The old man came out to the door on his cane, and they said, "Tell us, old man, what do we have in our hands?" The old man said, "I perceive from the fluttering and the chirping that you're holding a small bird." "Right you are," they said. "You are as wise as all have said. Now tell us, old man, is the bird alive or is the bird dead?" Well, the old man, he thought for a moment. He thought, "If I say that bird is alive, they will crush it and kill it. If I say that bird's dead, they'll let it go. And either way, they've got me." So he thought for a moment more, and he raised his eyes to meet theirs. And with the wisdom of the ages, the old man said, "The bird is as you will it. During these 13 sessions, I am going to give you the information that it takes. If you come to class and sit in the small group and are held accountable and encouraged when you're struggling, you will be given the backbone and the spiritual and the emotional support to change behavior. You have the tools at the completion of this course to change your life, to change your family tree, and to leave a legacy. But I can tell you this, when I'm done, I'll go home to my debt-free house and hug my debt-free wife. It's not up to me anymore. It's up to you. It's as you will it." Thanks.
First thing we walked in, he talked about Ben and Arthur, you know, and that whole thing. And that was the first thing that caught my eye.
I've seen it before, but the thing he did with the two people that started saving, you know, and how one never really catches up. Even though he saved more than the other one did, that's probably the one thing that always sticks in my mind.
I just want to save money right now.
Now get statements in the mail that say, "This is how much your emergency fund has earned," or "This is how much your retirement accounts have earned." And this is how all of the hard work that you've done is coming to bear.
I was told, well, you don't really understand what you're doing here. Well, I understand the simple thing of when I'm putting money in every month, and if I want to take it out, it's not worth what I'm putting in. That's not a good deal. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that.
I think in my future, I'll use it a lot. And as far as the investment part, I'm going to do my best to start using that, to start using all these things that I had no clue about, you know, until this point, you know.
Credit cards reek.